How's everybody doing, man? I am your host of the Melanated Combo Podcast. My name is Harrison. I'm happy to be back for a new year. You know, I took a break from the show last year, but I'm happy to be back. And this is the Melanated Combo Podcast, family, where we have detailed conversation style interviews with individuals from our community. And the goal of all of this is to inspire, is to empower, and really to let you know that you can do it. You know, we go through a lot of different things in our community with our families, with our finances, with white supremacy. We need to be aware that there's individuals out there who throughout their trials and tribulations, they've been able to make it to the other side, right? Like there's definitely light at the end of the tunnel. And my guest today is a prime example of that, family, right? So I've been doing my show for like two and a half, almost 3 years maybe. And there's a handful of people who have been repeat guests, you know, and like they are part of the family now, you know what I mean? Damn, they're like my co-host. And one of those individuals is the brother that we have on the show today. And this is a brother who took a horrific situation and turn it into something positive for his family, man. So on the show today, I have my brother, lawyer, author, Ron Knowles. What's up, Ron?
What's up? It's a blessing to be on the show again. Man, it's just a pleasure to be able to reconnect with you and the Melanated Podcast family. What's up, family?
Yeah.
We got a special treat for y'all today, that's for sure.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, Ron, like I was saying in my intro, bro, and oh yeah, like button, subscribe button, become a member of the Melanated Combo family. Thank you for everybody who's listening on the digital platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all these places. YouTube is where you see the video version of this show. So I appreciate everybody who support me. Now let's get into it. So everybody, I interviewed Ron a few years ago. I came across this brother because he has a very unique situation that turned him into the beast he is today. So him becoming a lawyer, him becoming an author, was all inspired by actual real events in his life. So Ron, for the people who haven't watched the previous two shows where you were on the Melanated Combo Podcast, check the archives, guys, you can find those shows. Tell everybody what happened to you and your family in 2007.
Well, in 2007, Harrison, we were raided by the feds, the DEA, FBI, my family, because of a legal medical marijuana dispensary that we had opened in a small town here in Southern California, in a county, may I add, one of the only counties in Southern California that voted to recall the governor. And so if you look that up, you'll figure that out. But long story short, about an hour outside of Los Angeles, opened up a medical marijuana clinic for those who were suffering from, you know, AIDS and cancer and other debilitating medical conditions, who had to drive to Los Angeles in order to procure their medicine. And so we wanted to, you know, fill that gap, if you will, in our community and open up a medical marijuana dispensary in our town, and was open for about a year. Everything was going great, going well, and until the feds showed up at my home and took everything, including my kids, arrested my wife, and I was facing 40 years in prison for manufacturing, distribution, maintaining a drug establishment, and, you know, all of, you know, 10 years for each, you know, federal charge. And was pretty much looking at my life, you know, as another minority, you know, spending the rest of my adult life or most of my majority of my adult life in federal penitentiary. But by the grace of God, when the Obama administration came in, the Department of Justice passed what's called a memo amongst the prosecuting attorneys in the states where medical marijuana was legal, which stated in quote, if you follow the state laws, then they weren't going to prosecute operators who operated legally in states where medical marijuana is legal. Well, we just happened to be one of those candidates, Harrison. And the long story short, I had to take a plea because the feds, they don't investigate you, you know, for almost a year, if you will, and all these resources that they put into investigating you and just, okay, you know what, we're just going to let you go. Mm-hmm. And also my skin is my sin because everyone else that operated out in LA, and mostly white and Caucasian operators, were not raided, were not arrested, although there was one individual that I know of that was raided and arrested. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you know, my skin is my sin. Had I been in LA or had I been in another community, I may not have been raided, but that's what happened. And but because of that situation and circumstance with the Obama administration and putting out that memo, they weren't just going to let us go with, you know, a handshake and okay, now we're all good. It was, you know what, why don't you take this plea for filing a false tax return? Under IRS section 280E, for all you legal heads out there, it says that if you operate a business that's illegal under federal law, you can't take any business deductions for that operation. Well, you know, I had a CPA that handled our taxes, so it wasn't like I was, you know, intentionally trying to dodge the IRS. We wanted to be above board, of course. Mm-hmm. But they found, you know, when the feds want to find something, when they want to get you for something, especially when it comes to taxes, you know, seven stories, you know, skyscraper filled with IRS volumes of various, you know, statutes in the IRS. And they found this IRS section 280E, $14,000 out of an estimated $9 million that they said that we made with the medical marijuana business from 2006 to 2007. But $14,000 is what they got me on the hook for, and filing a false tax return. And so that's what I copped a plea to in order to avoid that 40-year prison bid.
Yeah. And that's so, every time I think about your story, man, or the times I've read about it, it's just, so devastating to me that the laws in this country, they work for who they want them to work for. And I have so many members in my family and people that I'm associated with who've had to spend a lot of time in jail over weed. In this country, I mean, they find a way to make things legal or put it in a ramification where they can benefit from it. Then everything is all good. But in the interim where when they're doing that, a lot of innocent people can get hurt. You know what I mean? Yes. That's why I love your story so much, Ron, because this happens in like the realm of it happening to you, but this happens to Black families all day in different forms.
Yes.
Where the government is too powerful. They hit you with all these legalities. Your family don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And they can just bring you through the ringer. And what's so impactful about your story, brother, is you were able to come back from that. Like what the part he didn't mention, y'all, is this travesty happened to his family. Like it happens to a lot of us where it could be a family issue where finances are happening. It can be drugs happening in the house. It can be molestation, all these negative experiences that we go through in life. And being Black, sometimes it's a little more depending on the situation. You got to know how to come out of that shit.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, once it's said and done, the remnants of the situation is still there, but your family, your kids, the people that look up to you, they're still looking for you to make a way. And Ron was able to do that because think about it. And I've heard about this with brothers who get wrongfully convicted or they're in jail for a really long time and they know they didn't do it. So instead of crying about it, instead of just sitting around talking about it, woe is me, they go into active mode and they say, okay, how can I figure this shit out to get myself out of this predicament? And when you take that sort of mission, you always end up in the right place. And Ron, you was able to do that, bro, because think about it. You could have went through this situation and said, you know what, fuck it. I'm gonna just be scorned and I'm gonna just go get a job and duck off, right? You could have said, I'm gonna go and be radical and go march and go start a nonprofit where I fight these things. But you said, no, I'm gonna go to the legal books. Yes. I'm going to use the same thing they use to condemn me. I'm going to use it to empower myself.
Yes.
And it's nothing more beneficial to our community to be able to witness individuals that did what you did, Ron.
And you know what? I don't even want to get it twisted. At first, I did play the victim card, Harrison. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I did everything that I was supposed to do. Why is this happening? Woe is mm-hmm. me. I mean, from jump, I was playing the victim card. But when you've got little ones watching you, when your wife is about to leave you because you are the reason why this is all happening, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't want to carry on another generation of a broken family, because I came from a broken
family.
My mom and my dad were divorced. I didn't, you know, grow up with a father figure. And so that stuck in my head, Harrison, that I didn't want to carry this on for another generation. So it's like, you know what? Instead of being the victim here, what am I going to do to break the generational curse and fix my marriage? Because my wife is looking at me like, I said yes to this. I agreed to it. And look what it's done to our family. And I'm about to go to prison for 40 years and I can't even afford an attorney. So what am I going to do to right this wrong? You know, first and foremost, it was my faith. There was that disconnect between me and my spiritual self, if you will, when the dispensary was open. Yeah, I went to church and yeah, I claimed that, you know, the Lord is my savior, but I wasn't very convicted, or I wasn't, you know, as far as faithful as I am right now. After they say that when you go through that valley or the shadows of death, that's when you build that relationship more with the Heavenly Father.
And you ain't got nobody else to turn to at that point.
Bingo. And so that is what brought me out of that victimhood. Like, you know what? Don't play the victim. You know, if you don't want the generational curse to continue, what are you going to do about it? If you don't want to have your kids grow up without a father, what are you going to do about it? If you don't want to get a divorce from your wife, what are you going to do about it? So first and foremost, it was, I need to defend myself. So how am I going to defend myself if I can't afford an attorney?
Yep.
I'm going to go to law school. Who's going to accept me to go to law school with an ankle bracelet on and I'm under indictment? No law school is going to accept you. There's just no way. The odds are impossible. But you know what? I said, I'm going to apply anyway. All I need is one. One law school to say yes. And so I put out my you know, because I went to college and so I had enough prerequisites to go to law school, Harrison, but I didn't know if I was going to get accepted, because I needed to find a way to defend my case, because my attorney was telling me, just plead out. You know, I had the public pretender. He was just plead out. They can't.
He was working with them.
Exactly. And it's one of those things where in the prison system, when you go through the system, you learn a lot of things about, you know, how the inmates perceive the government and how they perceive lawyers and all this. You get a public pretender, they're busy, they're stacked up, and no offense against my public defenders that really go hard in the paint. So I'm not trying to diss all, because they may be listening right now, like, when you talking about me, not all public defenders. There's some that go hard in the paint and actually help you. But the one that I had, the public pretender I had, was, well, did you sell marijuana? Did you do everything that they said you did? Well, yeah, but it was legal under state law. You can't bring up state law. So you might as well just take the 15, because they're going to give you 40. Like, no, I'm not going to go to prison for 15 years for something that I know was right, and not see my child, you know, go to her graduation, or go to my kids' games, you know, or be able to just have those meaningful connections with my own kids and break that generational curse. I'm not going to let that happen. I'm going to do anything and everything I can to defend myself. I applied to all these law schools, Harrison. A ton of them denied me, but one said yes. And you know why they said yes? Well, it looks like you did everything according to state law. Lawyers are supposed to defend the state constitution. And so, you know what? We'll give you a chance. With an ankle bracelet still on my ankle, they accepted me into law school. And the only reason why I went was because I need to figure out how to defend myself. So that's what started this journey on becoming an attorney. It's just, I need to defend myself. I need to fight for my family. I need to break this generational curse, no one's going to accept me in law school, but you know what? It doesn't make sense unless I try. And so I applied and a ton of them said no, but one said yes.
And that's all it takes is one. And while you were saying, and I'm thinking, Ron, I'm like, damn, how many of our brothers got offered that 15 and took it?
Yes.
Think about that.
Yes.
Ron, how many individuals are in the penitentiary today because they took that plea deal? Because you got a public pretender. Ron can't say it because he a lawyer. I say the shit. A public pretender who make you feel like that's your only option. Right? Yes. Don't they tell you if you take it to trial, you're going to lose?
You're going to lose. The United States government. You're going to lose.
When in reality, sometimes they just don't want to spend the money.
Yes.
So they say, go ahead and plead out. And if I'm a public defender, pretender, or just a regular lawyer, if you plead out, that kind of look good on me. How does that look when a lawyer is defending someone and the individual takes the plea deal? Does that look good on the lawyer behalf?
So to the prosecuting side, it's a win. It's a win for them because they don't have to spend any time trying to build a case. They don't have to go through it trial. So for them, it's like, man, there's one other file off my desk and he's going to serve some time. That's a W for us. For the public pretender, it's, you know, another file off their desk, but for the public defender, if they're really going hard in the paint for you, it's, you know what? I'm going to move up in the ranks. I beat the United States federal government.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Man, it's on. There is those myriad of ways to look at the case from the prosecution side, from the public pretender side, and from the public defender side. But for you as a defendant, man, do you want to throw your life away or spend your life, you know, in a cage when you know you did right, when you know you were right?
Yeah,
man, come on now, stand up. Cause what's the most that can happen is if you lose, you know, you can get a sympathetic judge. That's like, which there's plenty of those cases where, you know what, I'm supposed to hand you a 40. But I can deviate from that because I know the facts of the case and I know what you did. So, you know what? I can give you house arrest or I can give you a year. I can give you probation. You never know. Judges are human too. So I encourage all of my brothers out there that's facing something that they know that they're in the right and that they weren't in the wrong. Man, stand up for your rights.
Fight that shit. Now, Ron, because I was thinking about something in hindsight, because I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. Because now, as you sit, I mean, a lawyer, two-time author, and it's unfortunate, but none of this shit would have probably happened if that tragic event didn't happen.
So true.
So when you look back at it in hindsight, do you think, damn, I had to go through that to get here?
You know, that's what the Bible says when it comes to, you know, your tragedy is your testimony, you know, blessings in disguise. You know, we've all heard those sayings before, but this is the actual proof in the pudding. You know, you go through that trial, you go through that fire, and you come out on the other side. I never in a million years would anticipate or expect that I would be an attorney. Because in the state of California, when you're convicted for a moral turpitude crime, which filing a false tax return, that says moral turpitude all over it, you don't get your law license. But when you go up in front of the those that are judging you, your character, and know the full context and they have the full picture of the details of what happened. I had a CPA. I didn't do my own taxes. I did everything that I was supposed to do under state law. It wasn't like I was paying people under the table or trying to not do the right thing. If whoever is judging your character or whomever is testing your faith or your morality, all of that is going to come out in the open, and man, your Lord and Savior, man, his warriors, his absolute truth, you know, no one can defeat that. And so that's what I was so convicted with, that, man, no one is going to impugn my character. No one is going to tell me that, you know, I have moral turpitude issues because of my conviction. You know, I'm not going to sit up there and let these things hold me back. And you have so many people. I have my kids looking up to me, Harrison. And
that's important.
And when they're telling you that, you know what, Dad, you can sit for the bar exam. And, well, if I sit for the bar exam, I may not get my license anyway. So why bother? Well, Dad, you always told us not to quit what we start.
Yeah. You know? Okay. Yeah, man, so that's powerful, bro.
So I sat for the bar exam, even though I was thinking, why in the hell am I taking this when I'm never going to get my license? You know what? Because I'm showing my kids that we don't quit something that we started, because then it gives them an excuse. It gives them an exception. Mm-hmm. That's those two words, those two E words. I hate excuse and I hate exception. Because mm-hmm. then it allows the exception and the excuse to become the rule.
Exactly.
And that's what we don't want in our community. Don't let the excuse, don't let the exception become the rule. So I had to put that aside and put that excuse, the exception aside, took the bar exam, passed, and then the next thing I know, man, I'm up for my license.
And come on now. That's such a miraculous story. And I would think, Ron, like, life be lifing, right? So it's all we're always going to have situations and things come up that try our patience, that test our belief in whatever creator we believe in, test our relationships. And I think when you go through traumatic, life altering situations and you find a way to not just be positive about it, but move in a positive direction after it, I'm a firm believer that life doesn't become easier, but kinda. Like, your perspective makes it a little easier to deal with things, because like I said, there's always gonna be some shit you have to deal with.
Yep.
But I learned, when you get through tough things and you remain a tough person through tough things, when something else tough is coming your way, you don't even feel the same way about it. Yep. In your mind, you thinking, you know what the fuck I've been through? This ain't nothing.
Nothing.
You see what I'm saying?
So
I think the test, I think our creator, the universe, creates these scenarios for people to step up and be who they are. Like, there was a lot of little breadcrumbs leading you to become a lawyer. Now, some of the breadcrumbs had shit on them. But they were breadcrumbs nonetheless.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was leading you in a certain direction, because throughout this whole process, think about if you wouldn't have took the test. Think about if you would have said, you know what? I don't even think I'm a pass. I'm not going to do it. But the universe used your child to say, well, no. That ain't what you be telling us. You better practice what you preach.
Exactly.
And then you activate it. And from everything, like having your kids taken, bro, having your life uphauled like that, that's some horrible shit. But to me, when this is all said and done, you're going to be nothing less than a hero to your kids, bro.
Man,
nothing less.
I got my oldest is graduating from Arizona State. She's getting her bachelor's. So this spring, she was 5 when Child Protective Services took her. My second oldest, she's a sophomore in college. My third oldest, and she was 3.
One. Okay.
She was taken, and then my third oldest was 1.
One, yeah.
Man, mental things, Harrison, and just, you know, because she was taken from her mother as a newborn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine as a newborn baby, you're taken from your mom, the only person you know in this world, and you're thrown into an environment where you don't a foster home.
Mm-hmm.
And she's graduating from high school this year. So, man, it's just again, yeah, you shit on those breadcrumbs, as you mentioned, but man, the bread is and the fruit, it was worth it. The blessing in disguise. Mm-hmm. Because those kids now are so resilient. There's nothing that when they get knocked left and right,
I bet
they're just like, you know what, just because of our example as parents and what they've been through, what they witnessed. Because my oldest, she remembers it very vividly.
Oh, wow. I bet.
When she was taken, you know, I recall in the book, she said, "Dad, you know, can we come home now? And, you know, I won't be bad." She thought that she was taken because she thought that she was the one, the reason why she was taken. So, yeah, it was definitely a harrowing experience, but it leveled us up as a family. It leveled me up as a man, as a human being. And so this, telling all of this to level up our community. We've been through so much stress and angst. This is Black History Month. Why are we celebrating Black History Month? Because of the ish, you know, to keep it PG, if you will, all the ish that we've been through as a community, 300 years of slavery. So now we're celebrating all the ish that we've been through and what we've come through on the other side. So yeah, that's why we're so resilient as a community, because of we built this country, you know?
That's a fact. So
that's what I would like for my brothers and sisters to take from this. Whatever you're going through right now, you've already got the chromosomes and the genes to be resilient.
Come on now.
So just utilize that, leverage it for your advantage. Right now, it may seem as a disadvantage because of your skin color or your situation, but you've already got inside of you that resilience to persevere and get to the other side. And man, that tragedy becomes a testimony.
You come on now, and you have it inside of you. The universe is just waiting for you to bring it out.
That's right.
There's always going to be trials and tribulations in life. And I like the fact that you brought up Black History Month, bro, because Ron, you are Black History, my guy. Because of what I do and just my general interests, I read a lot about the people, places, and things that have came before us, what they went through, what they had to avoid, all this type of shit. And your situation is very similar. Most of our leaders took a tumultuous situation and turned it into something that can be useful and beneficial to all of us.
Yes.
And that's my platform. That's why we going to keep rocking out, bro. Yep. Because what you doing is everything my platform represents, because I'm really big on Black people having unity and loving each other. And you can express this in a multitude of different ways, right? But like, the biggest way to show me that you love me and show me that we are unified as one is to do it by loving yourself.
Yes.
By taking your personal experiences and the things you've been through and using that to benefit us. Everybody nowadays, everybody trying to do the same shit, when in reality, it's only one Ron Knowles. It's only one Harrison Anderson. It's up to you to figure out, okay, why am I here? What is the path in the role that I should be on? And sometimes those breadcrumbs, listen to me, everybody. A lot of times you guys miss the breadcrumbs because you're depressed, because you're looking in a different direction, because you think you need to be going that way. Yeah. And that's not how the universe works. Yeah, it's leading you on a particular path and you just have to follow it. And this brother Ron is a prime example of that, Ron, because your situation could have ended a lot of different ways, my guy.
Man, I read a book recently. I think it's called the I can't think of the name right now, but there was a phrase, you know, I hate it when you read a book. It's a good book, and you can't even think of the road less stupid. There it goes. Keith Cunningham, The Road Less Stupid. Has a phrase in there. It called, if it quacks, feed it. So what that means, if there's something that you're doing as far as your purpose, and if it's quacking like a duck, keep feeding it. So for me, the cannabis industry, that's where I came from. That's, you know, my background, my history, but recently in my law practice, you know, the cannabis industry hasn't really been quacking when it comes to my law firm and growing the business. Why? The cannabis industry is very tumultuous right now here in California with the high taxes, the black market making way more revenue than the legal market, clients not paying. So I've pivoted, or I've done some focus now on family law. And why family law? I've been through family law personally, myself, with my kids and my family. going through the family law system. So helping those, especially our community that, mm-hmm. that's going through situations and circumstances with family law, whether it be custody, whether it be domestic violence, you know, restraining orders, things of that nature, when it comes mm-hmm. to family law, child support, those are the things that have been quacking in my practice. So I've just been feeding that. So that's just a little bit of nugget for my people out there. When it comes to your purpose and you don't know what you're doing, you can't figure things out, man, just pay attention to the universe. Pay attention to what's coming around to you. You know, open your eyes and ears. And if you're on something and you're trying to do something and it's not quacking, then hey, readjust, pivot, you know, maneuver, yep. and whatever's quacking, feed it.
Yeah, and shit, keep on going. And that's a, you know, and I'm a, we're going to get into a second everything you do for families now, because before we started, you mentioned that the cannabis business and people needing representation for certain things kind of fell back a little bit, but was quacking the family law. But that's very impactful as well when it comes to just, you know, helping our families stay together, right? But yeah. Something that I haven't talked to you about that I want to discuss real quick. First time you came on, we discussed the Audacity of Dope and Perseverance. The Audacity of Dope and Perseverance, everybody, is Ron's first book, where he details everything we've been talking about as far as the situation that happened to him in 2007 and how that played out. He details that in that book. But the second book, Compassion, Consequences, and Criminal Perseverance, I think last time we interviewed, it was right before the book came out. So tell me, because I know the narrative that the first book kind of gets into, where do you go on the second book?
So let me correct you. The first book, The Audacity of Dope and Perseverance, is actually about my coming up as a minority in my That's youth. True.
Yes.
And right. So I took the name of that book was inspired by The Audacity of Hope, which is the Barack Obama book. So yeah. I named it The Audacity of Dope. Why? Because, again, my family was broken, drugs. That was during the 80s, the crack epidemic, and moving into Detroit, Michigan, and seeing, you know, crack houses and things like that in East Detroit, moving to South Central LA. Because and growing up in the jungles and gangs and things like that. So the Audacity of Dope and Perseverance is kind of a play off of that name of the Obama book, and that dope broke our family, but we still persevered, you know, with me, myself.
Got it.
The Compassion, Consequences, and Criminal Perseverance, that book details, it's actually like the second part of the first book, and because the first book we kind of ended where, you know, I got married.
And, oh, I get it. Okay.
Yes. And then you know, the second book opens up with the raid and
got it. Got it. Tells the full story.
Yes, it tells a full story. Yes.
Yeah. Got it. That's dope. So it's a complete. Both of those books are complete then, because the first one just takes everybody through what you've been through as a child and everything that shaped you as a man.
Yes.
And then the second one gets into the trials and tribulations you had to go through. And I'm sure everything you went through the first part of your life kind of helped prepare you a little bit.
Bingo.
For everything that went on with the law. Okay. Yes. I see where you're going with that, brother. Now, so how has it been like being an author, bro? Like because I know it was a grueling process just writing the books and getting them out, but I'm sure you're proud that because of these books and everything else you're doing, your story is going to live forever.
Yes, that, and again, you know, helping our community, because a lot of people in our community come from broken homes.
Yes.
And I see it with my brothers that I'm helping out in my law practice and sisters, you know, trying to break those generational curses, or that only moms have rights and dads don't have any rights. You know, we grew up, Harrison, in that era where the dads didn't get custody of their kids. It was mom who usually got custody. And dad, you know, he could fight and pull teeth and nails and everything in court, and it was automatically custody, you know, went to moms. But long story short, that was the I guess the the premise, if you will, of building the law practice and trying to help other families in our community break these generational curses when it comes to child support and child custody and the other issues around domestic violence and things like that. So a lot of people don't know their rights in these areas of law, or they feel as if they don't have any rights, or they feel that they don't know how to navigate the system. And so bring in some of that knowledge and insight and the strategies, you know, because really it's like playing a chess game when it comes to any type of law case. When you are in an actual lawsuit, whether it be, you know, even a criminal lawsuit, it's really, you're playing a game of chess, and it's all about, you know, how do you make your moves, you know, and having a good attorney on your side is how you can strategically play that chess game to your advantage. Trying to do things on your own, you know, I was just blessed and lucky that I was just so, you know, just motivated and committed to law, that I just happened to read books and try to figure out how to defend myself in my criminal case, even though I still had an attorney. But now, even in family law, knowing that there's these advantages that fathers have, that they automatically assume that, you know, fathers don't have rights. Or that, you know, if you got to do child support, I'm going to get hit with child support. Well, no, you're not going to get hit with child support, brother. If you have 50-50 custody, the court is not going to come after you for child support if you have your kids 50% of the time and she has the kids 50% of the time. It's when that custody is divided up where the child support comes into play. But a lot of people don't know that. They just assume that I'm going to be on the hook for child support, or I'm not going to get the kids. No, it's chess, it's strategy. Are you motivated? Are you committed? Because if you're motivated and committed, that's half the battle right there. Once we know you're motivated and committed, okay, now how do we play this chess game? What's the strategy in order to get you the result that you aim for? And that's whether it be custody of your kids or your co-parenting, or you're trying to, you know, for child support, you don't want to get tagged by the state. A lot of our dads in our community, they just run away from child support, or you know what? I'm not even going to get a job anymore, so they can't find me. We don't have to
make it
do that
making
anymore.
It worse, making it worse,
making it worse,
making it worse. And this is important, bro, because me being a father of five, being on child support at one time, not understanding how I got myself in such a situation, blaming the women, all the shit I see a lot of my brothers do. You just got to keep fighting. Yes. You got to, like, granted, like the paperwork they hand the father may be a little thicker, you know what I mean, than what they give the mom to fill out. But you got to be diligent and keep at it, because like you just said, and a lot of men don't know that. This is something I knew when I was younger. I just didn't approach it the right way. But if getting that 50-50 joint custody, because something I wanted to kind of touch on with you, Ron, and get your opinion on it. Like, we have a lot of, because if you're in a situation where you have kids with a woman and you guys are in the house together raising the kids, there's going to be issues that arise, but that's cool. Because most of the time, if y'all doing it right, y'all going to be doing it together. Yep. That's not the problem in our community. The problem is these children being raised by only women. Now, how that gets to that point is a conversation we can have. But the single mother thing in our community, that's definitely relevant. And it's a fact, right? Even though I know a lot of fathers who are dedicated to being there and spending time with the kids and all of that. But what would you tell a young father, Ron, who not doing too good financially, may have a couple kids by a woman, head might not be in the right space, but he wants to do something to fix his situation. How can he approach things just to not make it worse? You know what I mean?
Great question, Harrison. And first, you know, I got to give that legal disclaimer that this is not legal advice. This is just merely two people having a conversation, and I'm just giving my opinion on things. So that's my legal disclaimer, you know, so that way the State Bar of California doesn't, you know, give me a phone call here and there. But anyways, if we're having this conversation on this individual that you just discussed, first and foremost, it's that you want to have a meaningful connection with your children. That, number one, is a priority in our community, because we as Black men, or you know, even, you know, when we came up, it was the notion that, you know what, she's mainly taking care of them. They don't really identify with me, or they don't really like me, or, mm-hmm. or whatever may be the case. You know what? Here in the state of California, you have rights as a father, and your rights extend to being able to co-parent with your child. If you're not together, your rights to be able to have visitation with your child, your rights to have custody of your child. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of, in our community, assume that in order to do that, that it's going to either cost a lot of money, or the court is against us men, Black men especially. So why even bother? It's not like that anymore. Mm. Yeah, there is that bias that the court system used to be biased and slanted towards mom. That's not the case, because why? There's all these studies that the state of California has then spent billions of dollars on that has come to the conclusion of children grow up with both parents in their lives, have better mental health, do better in school.
Yep.
They don't get into crime and substance abuse, all these studies. So it's not just that it's okay because mom's going to automatically get the rights. It's the state of California saying, you know what? We don't want to cause rifts and cause all these issues and problems with our state, with all these kids growing up without fathers and being wards of the state, or being supported by the state, or going to prison and substance abuse. So we make it a mandate in the state of California that both parents have the rights to raise their children. So if you are motivated, number one, as a father, you don't want to break those generational curses like myself. You don't have to be married to that woman in order to raise your kids. You can be completely separated, living in even in two different cities in the state of California, and still have meaningful connections with your kids, or still have the rights to parent your kids. She doesn't just get to decide, you know, where they get to go to school or what doctor they get to go see. You get to have some input in that. Why? Because the state feels that it's in the best interest of children to have both their parents in their lives. And so that's a huge shift and change in our state. I want to say since early 2000s or even before that. But the word hasn't got out on that, Harrison. There's still that stigma that fathers have no rights. She'll always get custody, or if she sticks me with child support, you know, I'm just going to duck and die and dodge. If you're able to demonstrate when it comes to child support that you don't have any income, you know, but you're trying to do what you can as a man, the state is not going to try to, you know, take everything from you and garnish your check. If you demonstrating that, you know what, I'm trying to do this, I want to be in my child's life, the more that you show that you are wanting to be there for your child, and you're stepping up to the plate, man, you're not going to get all these strikes against you. It's actually going to be a plus for you, because you're demonstrating to the state, to the courts, hey, I want to be a part of my child's life. I don't want to be an absent father. I want to have some meaningful connections with my kids. And if I don't have the income right now, but if we have 50-50 custody, if you got a good attorney, they should be able to fashion so that, well, when they're 50% with you, you take care of the kids, and whatever expenses comes with the kids, you handle them when they're with you. And then vice versa, when they're with mom, she'll handle her part. That way you don't have to worry about, you know, check garnishments or I got to get paid under the table because the state's coming after me for child support. Step up to the plate you'll that's when you'll see these things come to fruition. But again, a lot of that information is not out there, Harrison. So that's why we're having this conversation. Get that message out there.
Get that message out there. And what I learned as a young father, even though I was very immature in a lot of my ways, I knew I had to fight, because it was very discouraging to get that big old packet to fill out, to get all these things I had to do. And it felt like the woman could just make a phone call down there and adjust some shit. But I had to go through all this goddamn red tape. But I had to teach this to my son. If a lot of men, just like you said, Ron, they get these letters in the mail, they get this information from the government, and it goes right into a defeatist mentality. Yes. Like, fuck it. Yes. They already got me. I don't got no money. You looking at the, like the situation you might be in, where you don't got money, or you living with your mom or whatever it may be. Nah, man, you still got to fight for your kids. Now, granted, if we talk in joint custody in these types of situations, you need to be on your feet a little bit. You know what I mean? You need to have a comfortable place for your kids to go in, like a stable environment. But the biggest thing is, Ron, like you said, you just have to fight. Yeah. You just have to fight. And that's something I learned some years ago, that 50-50 is the best. And, you know, I implore all men to do that, because when you move out of the house with your girl, let's say you're in a situation where you never lived with the mother of your children, that happens, right?
Yep.
But getting your kids on the weekends or every other weekend, I'm telling you, fathers, I've been there personally. That shit's not enough.
Yes.
It's just not enough. And then if you're in a situation where you're getting them every weekend, every other weekend, and you're still paying this large chunk of money in child support, then it hurts you on both ends, because now you're paying the child support, but the kids don't feel like it's coming from you. Mm-hmm. Unless you have a baby mother who makes it a point to say, hey, this money came from your dad, we about to spend it on this. But who knows if you'll get that lucky. Yep. The kids don't know what's coming from you. So they just see mom spending the money, and then they come to you every other weekend, you paying all this money in child support, and they want to go to Disneyland, or they want to go somewhere and have fun. And you got to damn near say no, because all the money you're dishing out for child support. So it makes it much easier, and it benefits the kids more if you can just be a everyday father, if you can. So 50-50, if you're not in a relationship with a woman, is the closest to still being that everyday father. You know what I mean?
Yep. And I encourage those fathers who aren't in a relationship with their baby mother to have an amicable relationship. You know what? Mm. We're together, but we get along. Why? Number one, because you can set your own terms between you and her.
This is a fact.
You file that with the court. The court doesn't get involved in business unless it's in front of them and someone's asking for it. That means child support and custody. So if you're able to work out with your baby mom, hey, we'll do 50-50 and we don't have to, no child support from you, no child support from me. If y'all got that in an agreement and you file it, okay, again, this ain't legal advice. I'm just giving you some friendly heads up on things. Then that makes it so much better. And our fathers don't know that. They don't know that they can do that. They feel that they always got to be, you know, the animosity and, you know, she's a bee and, you know, I can't. No, if you had children with that woman, obviously you and her were amicable at one point in time.
At one point in time, she was good enough to lay down with. She can be good enough to have a conversation with.
Bingo.
All day long.
And that conversation would be so beneficial for the children, because really that conversation is about them. It's not about you and your baby mother. It's about them. And so if the focus is on that, my fathers, you don't have to worry about her running to the court and claiming custody and claiming child support. If you and her are getting along and amicable, you're able to have some conversation. You're able to sit down in Starbucks and be like, hey, you know what? This is about our kids. And we got together and we had kids. We, like you mentioned, we were able to lay down together. So let's sit down and hash this out. Let's not bring the court. Let's not bring the government. Let's not bring the man in our business. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, we as Black people, we like to make sure we keep the man out of our business. Well, this is the best way when you have that amicable relationship with your baby mom. Otherwise, if she, you know, if there's a lot of discontent and, you know, you don't want to be with her, but she wants to be with you, and there's yeah. all this animosity,
yep.
then it's like, you know what? Okay. I know how to hit you where it hurts. And then mm-hmm. they start using the court system as a power trip and trying to use it to get an advantage and get leverage. And that's not what our court system is for. It's for to protect those whose rights are being, you know, offended or, mm-hmm. or affronted against. It's
yep.
not to leverage power moves and try to one up the other side. So mm-hmm. So that's my two cents, if you will, not legal advice. My two cents on my people and people in general.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to stay out of these situations and with the courts and law enforcement, you know, because we have, you know, people that call the police, you know, because he locked me out of the house.
Yeah.
He yelled at, you know, domestic violence, another huge problem in our community.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be the aggressor in these situations. Don't get the police called on you. Why? Because now that is the crack in the opening of when it comes to custody. Because if you're the one that's the abuser and they call the police and you're arrested and you get convicted for domestic violence, guess what? You're not going to be able to see your kids. You're not going to have that 50-50 custody, because what that means is you abuse them, you're going to abuse the kids too. That's an automatic assumption. So stay out of the domestic situations, be amicable with your, you know, your ex, if you will. And it's not for you. It's not for a power trip. It's for your kids.
It's for the kids. And this is a fact, man. This is something, as a young father, I did a lot of things right, but I did a lot of things wrong. And how I approached the partner aspect, because again, if you're not in a relationship with somebody no more, fine, but you got to be partners.
Yes.
And I know a lot of my brothers get this part right, but I got this part wrong. And that's probably the biggest way to just make everything fucked up. Like you, all of that will trickle down to the kids one way or another.
Yep.
So this is important, Ron. Like I'm happy to have you back on the show, my brother. Everything you've been able to do with your life based on the tragic situations you've been through, I salute that, man. And now, you know, you mentioned, you know, this family law is quacking. You gotta see about it, bro, because in the interim, like while you're addressing these cases and helping these people, this is a strong benefit to our people. Like you said, all people, right? But our people need a lot of this type of tutelage, and you're using your gift and you're using the information you've learned as a vessel to help all of us. And that is really, like, when we talk about the United States of America and loving your neighbor and all this bullshit this country preaches, they make it really difficult.
Yes.
Only thing it is just caring about the person that's standing right next to you, thinking in your mind, I want to leave this earth, I want to leave this existence better than I found it.
That's right.
Simple as that. And if a person says, I'm going to leave it better by protecting everybody in these four walls, everybody in this house, I'm going to make sure they understand, they know, and they prosper. That's cool. But if we talking changing the structure of our society, changing the Black family to make it go in the right direction, you got to care about everybody.
Yes.
Yep. Especially when you're Black, you got to care about everybody. And what I'm doing, what you doing, is just a testament to the fact that you're thinking outside of yourself. Because I know, yeah, finances is a byproduct of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you helping change lives, bro. And I appreciate that.
Man, thank you so much, Harrison. And again, it's a blessing to be in this position, and you're absolutely right. For me, I look for our firm in general to serve our clients. We're not here to get as many cases as we can. Yeah, we mm-hmm. got to keep the lights on and the food on the table.
Yep.
But at the same time, we want to serve our clients. We want to serve our community. And just knowing that there's just a lot of misinformation out there when it comes to these particular issues or assumptions out there to blow the walls away and exceed the sky's limits when it comes to these assumptions and these narratives that simply aren't true.
Simply aren't true. And that's why this show and, you know, information that dispels those myths is important, because we got to work together to make sure we fix this shit and meet people where they are, Ron, because I know some of my brothers, some of the things I talk about how I approach it, they don't want to hear that shit, but they'll get to the point where it makes sense to them. But you got to meet people where they at, so we can attempt to help. You feel me? So I'm happy to have my brother Ron Knowles back on the show for a new episode of the Melanated Convo podcast. Like I said, the brother's been on the show twice. So go back and watch those episodes where he goes deep into everything that's happened to him. And we just had some really good conversations. You know what I mean? But I appreciate having my brother back on the show today. Ron, do me a favor and tell everybody where they can reach you.
Man, knowleslegal.com, where you can reach us on our website. I'm on Instagram, Ron Knowles is my Instagram handle. I'm on LinkedIn as well. Reach out to your boy. I mean,
if you need
any assistance, you want to say hi. we don't shy away from our community and from people, because if it wasn't for people in our community, we wouldn't be where we are today. So
there we go.
It's a blessing to serve. And man, Harrison, I love what you're doing. Thank you for inviting me on the platform again. Man, you blowing up.
I'm trying, man, with the help of people like you, but we just got to keep pushing in the same direction. That's all I'm trying to do, is we don't have to think about things completely the same. Like we always say, Black people aren't a monolith. We don't all have a set way that we want to do shit. But at the end of the day, we got to have a common goal. And that's what this is all about. Yeah. So, and also real quick, before we go, Ron, tell everybody where they can get your books.
Oh, Amazon is your best friend. The Audacity of Dope and Perseverance. You can go on Amazon, do a Google for Ron Knowles, and that's N as in Nancy, A-U-L-L-S. For those that know me, it's like Beyonce Knowles, but with an N. Or what I used to say in law school, it's like balls, but with an N.
That's hella funny. Well, everybody, thank you so much, man, for tuning into a brand new episode of the Melanated Convo podcast. You can follow me on Instagram at MelanatedConvo100. You know what I mean? We're going to continue to have these conversations, continue to bring in guests that are riveting. I know, you know, we entertain a little bit, but this is about knowledge and empowerment, y'all. You know what I mean? So that's what you come to the Melanated Convo podcast for. And I'm happy to be the presenter of these ideals. You feel me? So follow me on Instagram, become a subscriber of the show. I'm on all the digital platforms. I'm on YouTube as well under the Melanated Convo. We're going to keep having these conversations, family. Thank you to my brother, Ron Knowles, for coming on the show again. I appreciate you being here, brother.
Man, happy Black History Month, and love, peace, and hair grease.